welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate Universe discussion podcast. I am Cetra.
I'm Boom.
And despite some initial confusion, we are discussing Awakening.
How ironic that we're discussing it just after waking up ourselves.
Yeah, I apologize for my voice today. It's going to be a little on the rough side.
Oh.
So here we are again.
Yeah, shit is happening. I.e., there's a ship on the horizon. Except for we didn't know that last episode. We just knew there was something that made them all feel very resigned as they stared out the window.
But honestly, when could they not be staring out the window of destiny looking like they were probably going to die? Like...
Yeah, it happens pretty frequently, doesn't it? Like, they look at the star that's going to kill them, at the aliens that are coming to get them.
Yeah, but what we get this time...
is a little destiny!
Yeah, this... to me, it wasn't clear the size difference immediately. Yeah. I'm like, it looks exactly like Destiny. And unless you notice... I think they show a screen with the relative ship sizes about twice.
Yeah.
So unless you're watching very carefully, you're like, why is this ship any different from Destiny? But it is. It's like a third the size, so.
Yeah. Brody says they're on a collision course, and Young is just like, well, why the fuck aren't we? Like, everything else goes wrong in our lives. Rush is surprisingly calm about the whole situation because he's Rush and he was already on the bridge and knew what was happening and, you know, gives that speech about like, well, I thought docking was obvious, but it's easy to think that's obvious when you're in the main control room and Destiny is talking to you.
Well, and it's another one of those things of like, if it's obvious, Mr. Man, why didn't you say something immediately?
Right.
Like, okay, let's think about Rush from a season ago, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He would have been saying, well, Destiny wouldn't have dropped us off here if it hadn't meant something to happen. We're headed straight for this other ship. We're almost certainly going to dock with it. Look at our look at our trajectory. It's exactly this. Look at our speed. It's doing this. No, Rush just doesn't want to fucking explain himself to anything.
Right.
And he's not as confident just running his mouth about things.
In case he sounds like he knows too much.
Exactly. There's something going on. Either he's afraid of knowing too much or he's not as good at bragging and explaining when it's not something he really figured out.
Oh, that's a good way to see that. What's sad to me, though, is that Young and Rush are actually quite close together while they're talking about predictions. And I feel like Young is starting to trust Rush. And I'm like, look what you could have had!
Yeah, don't,
I'm like singing
don't
it down
even
in my
get
mind.
Used. Don't even get used to that, because next episode, we are right back on a train.
We could have had it all.
Could have been so good.
Yeah. And then Rush walks away and Young is just like, that fucking guy.
It's awful. Rush is a terrible person. I'm not even going to try apologizing for him.
There's no defense for Rush in these episodes at all. Like, I mean, there's some... I wouldn't totally blame him for Riley's death, but he's definitely the most culpable for it.
Yeah, and he is on a real downhill curve here. He's not trusting his team. He's not trusting even the very few members of his team that he does generally like and trust.
I.e. Brody.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but we all know what we're thinking.
Brody. Just watch Brody this whole time. He looks so confused and kind of like... I don't know.
Yeah.
He's like, he doesn't get Rush.
No, he's put in the work to earn Rush's trust. He's put in the work to be the guy that understands Rush, the guy that Rush doesn't condescend to.
Right.
And here he is, right back on the bus with everybody else, not getting anything explained, not even getting enough information to figure it out, which he knows he can.
Right, which has been his MO, is that he always, if he has the information Rush has, he figures it out. And so he thinks they're on a collision course. That's the most telling thing, right? As Rush is not concerned, they're going to dock. but Brody thinks they're on a collision course, which means Rush didn't figure that out on his own at all, as you stipulated earlier. So Brody's got to be like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Anyways, Rush wants to go over. Young says, nope. Yeah. You got to stay here. Oh.
You want something? I think not.
And then next, Telford is asking Camille what's going on. Because she went back to Homeworld to talk about the LA.
Yeah. And Rush is like, I don't actually really care about that so much as what the hell's going on with the ship.
Right.
Did I say Rush? I meant Telford. Telford then doesn't care as much about Homeworld. I mean, it seems like now that he's free of that, now that he's on Destiny, he really does care about Destiny.
Right.
And this mission and this crew, which is cool.
Yeah, but they have this weird conversation that I think is needed, but it's also unneeded at the same time, right? Like, Telford's like, hey, I can be your partner in this. I don't understand why you're being such a dick to me. Like, we've established that I got brainwashed. I'm cool now. I have earned your trust. And, which, I don't understand why Young wasn't already at that point, right? Like, okay, Telford's someone I can trust now. Because he was in the first episode of this season. And then suddenly he's not. And then once Telford's like, I can be a partner to you, he's like, oh, thank God. Which just goes to show. Young doesn't like to lead.
Yeah. Consistent / inconsistent character here. But then I think that's always been Young's problem, right? He reacts a little too emotionally motivated for the position he's in.
Right.
So he wants to be in charge when he wants to be in charge, and the rest of the time, you know, he is happy to have that partnership.
Yeah. I mean, you say that and I agree with you, but there's always those times when he keeps his emotions in check and in a very impressive way. Like when they're all about to get mowed down by Kira. And he's just standing there calm as fuck. Or when he's watching Telford die, calm as a cucumber.
He definitely has, like, soldier mode that he can turn on. And that's very consistent. But the issue is that and it's the issue that we're seeing with everyone on Destiny, right? The length of time that they're stuck here that could constantly be deemed, you know, a crisis situation.
Right.
Means that you can't maintain that level of focus. You can't be in soldier mode, leadership mode all the time.
Right.
Rush can't be, you know, in super focused solve the problem Rush mode because there's so many problems.
So they're losing their grip on how to do things, both of them.
Exactly. We're gonna see Rush's come crashing down next episode. I'm sorry that every episode I'm like, next episode, ladies and gentlemen.
You're like the episode hype man. Next episode, we'll see shit crash down. Is next episode where, like, they, like, punch each other?
I don't think it comes to blows yet next episode. But if this episode is an action episode with, spoilers, new aliens and, you know, exploring a ship and being more of a Stargate, next episode is 100% a people episode.
Okay. God, I haven't seen this in so long.
Yeah, it's a weird parallel because Human was episode 4 of season 1, right? Where we got Rush's flashbacks, and so episode 4 of season 2 is also a very character-centric episode.
Human Earth was episode 4 in season 1.
Oh, I understand that Air is 3 parts, and I don't believe that. So, okay. Yep, you're right.
I see what you're doing. So, Air, Light, Dark, Earth... No, that's still 4.
It's still 5. All right. I don't know anything.
I thought Human.
I'm the future episode hype man. I'm not the past episode hype man.
I don't live in the past.
Look to the future with me, boom.
We say as we talk about a season, like a show that's like 6 years old at this point.
And we keep
wishing
that
it would have like a new series. But whatever, it's fine.
Anything, man. Anything.
So Telford gets to go over, right?
Yeah, Telford gets to go over after calling Young by his precious first name.
it's like a Japanese anime. Senpai called me by my first name.
First name, no suffixes. They must be so close. You need Rush to call Brody Adam, don't you? You need it.
I need it. No, actually, there's something quite sexy to me about him always calling him Mr. Brody.
Well, you know, it's like Holmes and Watson.
He doesn't call anyone else. But, like, you know what? Let's go down this tangent, right? He calls Volker Volker. He calls Park Park. Like, Eli Eli. Mr. Brody is the only one who he has had any respect for, if you think about it. But when, of course, when he's not talking to Brody, he always just says Brody. Like, I want Brody. So I feel like there is, like, Senpai is noticing Brody moments.
But Rush calling someone Mr., I always assume, is pointing out the lack of doctorates.
I think that's the case with Volker, though, by not saying Dr. Volker. Because he says Dr. Park.
Oh, and he used to call him Dr. Franklin.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
He didn't have a lot of respect for Franklin until after the death.
Oh, maybe you're right.
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to... I don't know. How does he respond to... Like, how when he's talking to Gloria, Mind Gloria, how does he... Because he wants Franklin, right? And Gloria's like, nope, you get me. Did he say, I want Dr. Franklin now? Or did he say, I want Franklin?
It's an excellent question.
I can't remember.
We'll leave it to you to figure out. I would say chat, yeah. But we're not on live stream. Tumblr comment friends.
Damn it. Anyways, I guess we should actually go back to this episode instead of letting you indulge in my Brody feels.
So while Telford is leading an away team, equivalently, they don't call it that, Young confronts Lucian Alliance people about being fuckwits and that they're probably never going to get out.
I mean, like, were they really fuckwits? Like, Varro is the least fuckwit of them all.
Yeah. And, but...
I mean, I just don't see Young's point to this. Like, it's one thing if it's a political move to just let them know how strong he is, but I don't think that's the case. I think he believes in what he's saying. Like, he does, he's just gonna keep them in there forever, which is inhumane and against pretty much all Geneva conventions with prisoners of war, especially once they're cooperating.
Young is definitely having an episode that Greer would approve of.
I believe Greer does approve of this.
But he does, and next episode when they stop containing the Lucian Alliance people, Greer does not approve of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's Young being weird. And basically just showing that there's still tension here with these people, which I'm not sure needs to be shown.
Well, I think it needs to be shown if the entire arc of the season is supposed to be them getting along towards a greater purpose, which we both know is not what happens. Varro is basically the only survivor of Lucian Alliance. Which, why? Why?
And again, it doesn't give us... It gives us only this outside view on the Lucian Alliance. We're not seeing them interacting with each other individually. We're not seeing... you know, what's being discussed among them on their own.
Right. Yeah, why didn't they do that? Like, I'd like to see tensions between them themselves, right? Like, you know, Varro going like, don't worry, if we just keep cooperating, it'll happen. Because he knows what Earth is like and all that stuff. And then there's, like, the Simian version who is like, nope, we gotta break out or we're gonna die here. Like, yeah. Where is that tension? Well,
and there could have been, there's a conversation that happens in the next episode that could have happened here, which is Simian being like, well, yeah, but we're not actually cooperating, right?
Right.
And Varro going, we're all cooperating, you motherfucker. Like, play along, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But we don't get any of that.
Too bad they went the direction they did with Simian. Like, oh, the fridging. So much fridging. Anyways, Chloe finds TJ.
Yes.
And is like, hey, I think you should talk about it. And TJ goes, I lost my baby. What do you want me to say? Peace out.
Yeah. And TJ's basically like, yep, I have feelings. There's nothing anyone can do about them, so this isn't happening.
It's really telling that she goes to Varro later on to talk to him about her feelings. Maybe that's not what she initially meant to do, but it's what happened. And yeah, it's like, well, she needs someone outside of the experience to talk to.
Exactly. I think he has been sympathetic to her. He was present when it happened, so she doesn't have to tell him, like, hey, I got shot and lost a baby.
Right.
He doesn't have the emotional ties to the crew and the situation and their complex, interconnected little family that everyone else does. Even Chloe, who means well.
I mean, I just, like, I get why Chloe did what she did, because she wants TJ to know that there's someone there that cares. But if I were in TJ's position and someone like Chloe approached me, I wouldn't feel comfort in it because they have no idea what I'm going through. And as much sympathy as you can have, until you have empathy, you can't meet me at the level of grieving that I'm at.
Yeah, that's accurate. I remember having a conversation a long time ago, a lot of episodes ago, of a similar situation where I felt like Chloe was trying to be comforting but was making TJ being pregnant be all about the rest of the ship too.
Yeah, that was on that was on the planet with the obelisk Faith.
Yeah.
The episode Faith.
And I think that may be kind of what's echoing for TJ here. She's like, okay, yeah, sure, you want to help, but like you want to I think what you said, like, she can't have empathy, and TJ doesn't need the sympathy.
Right.
And she doesn't want Chloe to pretend that she understands, because Chloe can't possibly understand. This wasn't Chloe's baby.
Right. It reminds me of, in a real-life situation, Patton Oswalt has recently come out since his wife died about a year ago. It was, like, really sudden, very tragic. And people are, like, keep telling him, like, what the grieving process is like, and you know, like, the healing time, and, like, you know, maybe you need to get out there and be funny, because he's a stand-up comedian. And he's like, what I learned over this year is that unless someone has gone through exactly what I've gone through, they have no idea what my grieving process is, or what anyone's grieving process is. It's going to be different, and when the grieving's over, you're going to know it. Like, it's not going to end, because someone is helping you end it, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel that with TJ here. And she's doing remarkably well and strong anyways.
Well, yeah, and she's obviously made a choice to, you know, prioritize what needs to be prioritized.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot else you can do. Like, grief is not a straight path that you can walk or run down and get to the same destination.
It takes years.
I was going to say, she's a medic. She knows that. She's seen this
from
a lot of angles. Maybe not this angle before, but...
Right, and she was also ambivalent about having the baby in the first place. So she probably got to deal with a lot of emotions of, like, maybe she feels somewhat relieved.
Yeah.
And that can and also make her feel really guilty.
Exactly.
But the other important part of this conversation is that Chloe's leg wound is completely healed. What a throwaway line. That's really important.
and that's going to be addressed... More
next
in
episode,
pathogen.
I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yep. I think we saw her just looking at the wound last episode.
Yeah. And at the end of this episode, they have her looking at her leg again as she's writing in her journal. Jesus Christ, Elise Levesque has the longest legs I have ever seen. Oh my gosh.
Legs for days.
Legs for years. Like, do they end? Rush tries to get away from the control room, and he does classic move everybody does when they don't want to be somewhere. I have to go to the bathroom. Is that okay with you? Because no one's going to call you when not going to the bathroom, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, and you can watch Brody and Park's faces shift, because I think this is the scene where, because I have a note.
No, Brody's on the ship right now.
Oh, this is not... I have a note of a scene that Park looks at a thing and says, Rush, you need to see this. And then Rush is like, no, Brody, look at it. And then Brody looks at it and goes, Rush, you need to see this.
Oh, what is that?
Well, I thought it was in this episode, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, I would have, like, had all the Brody feels. Oh my god, that makes me
And then Rush
so happy.
Still... doesn't take it seriously, which is one of those points at which you see Brody shift to, like, what's going on here? Something's wrong. I said it was important. He should care.
Right. Huh. Interesting. So, Glory, we're gonna skip the Brody wanting to split up and Matt being like, nope, splitting up's a bad idea, which is funny because they definitely split up later on in the episode.
Never split the party, guys.
That's, well, I mean, Volker and Rush are together when they get taken down by the Ursini, so they weren't totally split like they were when Volker was alone and the Ursini came. I think they just got false sense of security, is what happened.
Well, the camera's telling us this is ominous and a bad idea.
And Matt is agreeing with the camera.
Yeah, Matt can read the environment. He knows when he's in a horror movie and not a regular sci-fi.
I was really, my first comment about the ship was like, I feel like if the ship wasn't never made for people to be on it, why are there like control rooms and spaces for people to be? But then I listened to the commentary and apparently like they narrowed the fuck out of those hallways. Like when they're bumping into things, those are the actors legitimately bumping into things on accident. It's that tight. So I rescind that thought.
Well, and I mean, you gotta think, like, it had to have room for programmers to get in and make sure it was all working. Or, they had to hope that maybe later maintenance teams would be able to keep up with these ships or things like that.
That's a good point. That's a
Who
good
knows
point.
how the ancients freaking think, man, but.
Nobody knows. You know how ancients think? They think in deus ex machina ways. So Gloria rushes on the bridge, not in the bathroom, and Gloria's talking to him. And they figure out that they can go home, and Rush is super conflicted about it. But he does the right thing. He doesn't hide it.
He does. Yeah, he doesn't hide it, and he lets them figure it out, and he doesn't shut them down.
Well, I guess he kind of hides it. I think he just waits for Eli to figure it out and just hopes Eli
Exactly.
won't.
Exactly. And that's another thing, right? Like, if he was telling the truth when he tells Young that he's, on board with Young's version of the mission, which is get the crew home, he should have been delighted to, like, hop out and explain this to everybody with only a glance at a console. Like, do you know what this means? No, you don't, because I'm smarter than you. It means we can send all of you home and I'll stay here.
You're right. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't disbelieve him when, I know that's not a word, but I'm using it. I don't disbelieve him when he says he does want to get the crew home. I think
Oh, he
his
does.
worries is that he doesn't want to lose some of the crew. I think he wants to keep like Park and Brody. Would like to get rid of Volker.
Yeah, and I think there's multiple angles to that, right? If he was in a place where he knew that he could trust the core of his team that he needs, maybe Park, Brody, Eli, to choose to stay with him. Or if he could come up with a situation where they could continually be able to dial Earth in a normal Stargate situation, he would be 100% on board with that. Because this is another one-time situation that would be an evacuation, and he knows that he would lose at least Eli and Park, I think he's more conflicted, and so he lets them figure it out on their own.
Like he doesn't want to stand in their way, but he also doesn't want it to happen. Though I don't think he would like people coming from Earth through the Stargate because it would mean he would lose his command. Like Telford's talked about it before, right? Replacing Rush.
Yeah, but Telford has only talked about replacing Rush while he was brainwashed.
That's true.
So,
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
yeah,
See,
it
I also
depends.
need to like remember when Telford is a bad guy and when he's a good guy.
Yeah, Telford
His heel
ostensibly
turn.
is now back to being a good guy in that he doesn't appear to actively distrust Rush more than he should.
That'll change later.
Yeah, he obviously knows Rush enough to know to not trust him completely.
Yeah, but he is way better at handling Rush than Young is. So Telford comes to Young. Oh, this is where they have the conversation about like, yo, I can be your partner. You're tired, let me help. Sounds like a Harlequin novel. So they send Telford over, and Young is definitely having trouble separating the Davids, like the David who had an affair with his wife and the David who is his friend.
Wow, I always forget that Telford slept with Young's wife.
It's because it was, like, meaningless to the plot pretty much from Faith
on. Wow. And they don't even, like, of all the stuff they show us in the review episodes, they don't remind us of that.
I think it's because both Telford and Young are trying to forget it.
Yeah, there's that.
Because there's got to be a weird squidge factor for Telford, because he knows it was under his own volition. Brainwashed, yes, but under his own volition.
Oh, yeah.
And he slept with Everett's wife.
Oh, God.
So, and like, they both have to be, like, struggling with that, like, this happened. Let's just pretend, like, there's no way to interact with that it happened, because it's really no one's fault anymore. But it's still in between them.
Yeah, the whole upper command structure is a mess.
It is.
So then Young and Ray meet up in the hydroponics lab and have a conversation. It's basically Young saying, "You've said too much to the Lucian Alliance people," and Ray going, "Well, I'm trying to have conversations with them like a human person."
Right.
"So that they will share with us," and Young being like, "You've said too much to Lucian Alliance people," and right, walking away. Yeah, she tries to be sympathetic toward him, and she tries to tell him that he's wrong, and she tries a couple of angles, and none of it helps.
Then she lands on Riley,
like, yeah,
a service for him. And how telling is it at the end of this episode that it's Greer picking up all of Riley's stuff, and there's no service that Young is presiding over for that poor young man?
Yeah. I assume that there was a civilian, like, wake kind of situation, but they don't show it to us.
They always showed it in Battlestar Galactica. God.
Well, yeah, and they showed it in Star Trek, too.
That's true. That's true.
Oh,
my next note, by the way. His Greer got a hamstring injury fucking park. Yes, that is a scene in this episode.
Oh, God. I had almost forgotten that Greer and Park was, like, an ongoing thing.
Right.
But that also becomes slightly relevant later, though. We'll discuss that.
It's interesting, because it always feels like it's out of nowhere, but it never is. Like, it's always, like, this, like, small thread in the background. Like, even, like, when Greer goes to sit down with, like, the scientists and all that, like, there's definitely, yeah, something there. Like, who he chooses to sit next to, or who, or, like, he said something that pissed her off and she walked away. And I'm like, so there's always been there, this thread, but it's just so minor that you think, what the fuck? They have babies in the alternative timeline?
Yeah, I think, I wonder how much of it is one of those things that's, like, I wonder how much of it is writers or directors saying, "And remember, you two have this relationship," and how much is just the actors being like, "Our characters have this relationship, so the way we interact with each other is this," and...
From what I understand, that is a actor thing more like than a writer thing.
Okay. That's what it feels like. It feels...
And then when the writers remember, hallelujah.
Yeah. It feels more like the wrestlers that we talk about remembering their feuds even when the storyline has moved on.
And yeah, like Dean Ambrose?
Supposed to. Yeah. He knows everybody he's ever fought with, ever.
I love it, but there's, like, a Big Show just like, I don't know. I'm just going to do what the plot tells me, whatever. And you're like, but weren't you best friends with Jericho?
I have abs now. Let's have a fight.
What's going on here? Meanwhile, Dean's like, all right, Bray, I'll team with you, but don't forget that I remember you fucking with me for a year.
Oh, man. Right, I'm sorry, we can't. So, back on Destiny, a ship where there is no professional wrestling.
No.
Park comes back and talks to Brody and Eli, and they're all looking at their various, trying to get this...
It's not Brody, energy Brody's still on the work. Ship.
It is a person in the dark with curly hair.
Then it can't be Brody, because Brody...
I know.
He, like, goes up the ladder to fix a malfunction, and he tells... that to Volker.
You're right.
That's how they split up. So I don't know who it is.
Team Brody and Volker is on the ship. It's Eli and Park on Destiny, working on this
right.
This strategery. And so here we are. We left the scientists alone on the seed ship first while the military explored. And now Brody has left Volker alone.
Yeah. I really love what happens when Brody's, like, not when Brody, when Volker's alone and the alien comes. And he's, like, immediately like, oh my god, I surrender! And it just falls down. I laughed so fucking hard.
It's a really good kind of, like, betrayal of your expectations, right? Because they've been building up all this tension of, like, something very bad is gonna happen.
Or not. I don't know. In the commentary, by the way, they said that the aliens were specifically supposed to look adorable and something that you could, like, empathize with. But they also worked really hard to, like, show that they were wearing armor that was, like, worn in a lot of different ways. Like, you know, taken a lot of damage. So I thought that was really interesting about them.
Oh.
Like.
Interesting.
We think they're cute, but they're actually battle-born aliens.
Interesting commentary things that I don't notice.
Yeah.
But.
So Rush gets taken to the Stargate manufacturing facility, which is a huge deal. We never see this in Stargate fucking ever. We don't know how the Stargates are made. And Rush is just like, whatever.
Rush is like, I understand there's other shit for me to do. Right? Let's go.
Like, what good is manufacturing Stargates for me right now? Literally does me nothing.
Yeah, like, that's not what I wanted.
And I just love how Matt and Greer are just, like, so excited to show him. And they're so deflated when he's like, whatever. Whereas if it was, like, Rodney McKay, he would have, like, freaked out and fucked one of the Stargates. He would have loved it so much.
Oh, I wasn't gonna say anything inappropriate about McKay, and then you just took it all the way.
I guess he's got a big dick in my headcanon, like.
Okay, then.
Anyway.
No, I want to talk about the most important thing that happens, which is that we have a flashback to TJ on the ship treating Simeon for some sort of head wound. Probably the one Young inflicted. Did that happen this episode? And he tries to get snotty with her, say inappropriate stuff.
Right.
And she, with no backup, with no anything, is just like,
Can you handle me?
I am also a soldier, and you will not fuck with me.
I liked how she was like, can you handle this? And he's like, nope, I can't.
And he's like, oh, yeah, okay, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And says a lot, I think it's Vero next episode that says, you know, his original planet did not have great social skills. And I'm like, what you mean is they were a bunch of male chauvinist assholes, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, I like how that shows that the Lucian Alliance has varying cultural aspects to it as well.
Yeah.
So Young painting it with one brush is very incorrect.
Absolutely.
So Varro and TJ are talking, and he goes, hey, guess what? I can't empathize because I lost my wife due to a freak building collapse. And yeah. I didn't get over it until I realized that life is just about loss. And I think that's actually a really good way to go about that. Like, to just accept, like, we're not gonna, like, we'll gain, but we're always gonna lose. Like, people have to die. It's something that happens in our lives. And we have to lose things to change. And I just thought that was really helpful of him.
And, you know, once again, here's this moment where it's someone outside of the situation that knows the right thing to say. His wife's name is Anthea, which is the fake name that Mycroft's assistant gives John Watson in the first episode of Sherlock.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's such a cool name. How come that name doesn't get used more?
Isn't Anthea also the name of Anthe in Utna?
No. There's no A at the end of hers.
Oh, I thought Anthe's was like a nickname for like a full name.
Official Japanese is Anshi.
Oh, okay. Well, never
straight
mind.
Up, no additional name. Should be. Probably should be, but.
Yeah, because you ever heard of Anthe? That's not a name.
It doesn't seem like a real name.
So TJ is radioed to bring her medkit. Everyone's being very vague. Volker's like, I have something interesting here. TJ, we need you to go over with the medkit. Can someone just say on the radio, there's an alien over here, instead of them being surprised?
They know that TJ is treating Lucian Alliance.
True.
Why would they say aloud on an open channel, by the way, aliens?
Well, why didn't Volker say, by the way, aliens?
Depends on how open people's walkie frequencies are.
That's true. I get that. Oh my god. My next note is, Telford is like, put me in, coach, which is the most effective way to get Young to do anything, and that's to appeal to his superior officerness.
Yeah.
Even though technically Telford outranks Young, even though they're the same.
Yeah.
Rank.
Telford, yeah, Telford is weirdly like, let me do a thing.
He's so political.
He really is, and he's, we're seeing this other side of what a Stargate Commander Colonel could be,
yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. This much more politically savvy,
right.
Like, let's build a team, but I'm in charge of it, kind of situation.
It's interesting. Well, I mean, I know that they're both colonels, but I believe that if, on the ship, Young outranks him because he was given that power, but technically, Telford was the lead of the expedition, so he should be outranking Young. It's very confusing.
Yeah, if he hadn't come through in the weird way that he did, where his loyalty was questioned, I think that would be true.
Right. So, Telford goes, TJ goes, I like how Telford asks Rush what it's saying, and Rush is like, I don't know. Like,
do I look like a linguist?
And do I look like Daniel Jackson? Shows,
yeah, it shows that, well, one, here we are again. Rush isn't Daniel Jackson, right? And two, it shows that kind of, like, core misunderstanding from the military side, where it's, here's Telford doing, honestly, the exact Jack O'Neill school of things of, like, if you don't understand what's going on, ask the scientist.
I just really
and
love
then the scientist is like, I speak one alien language. I don't know what this is. It's not going to help.
Right? Well, I just feel like that's the case with scientists in general, because they'll be like, what's this thing with the gravity and whatnot, and someone's like, I'm a biologist.
I don't know, sir. It's science.
Right? It's something's happening. I don't know what gravity wells are. I took, like, physics 101 15 years ago and has since been studying nucleuses. So Scott tries to communicate with it. The alien goes into this, like, adorable sitting position. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Everything about this alien's body language, they're clearly trying to make us feel that it is...
harmless.
Non-threatening.
Volker and Brody have the most adorable fight about how shitty the piece of fruit is that they gave the alien.
It's this weird, like, stress fight where you're like, oh, to them, this isn't even... any, like, that much newer or weirder
than anything else they've gone through.
Than anything else. And so it's still completely, like, normal to them to just have this little spat about, like, right.
What kind of fruit does it taste like?
What's a rabbitan? What's a longan? You're full of shit. It tastes awful. Like,
and then, like, Brody's like, see, the alien doesn't like the fruit either. I'm like, Brody, there's a time and place for this stuff. Ah, oh, Brody. I love him.
Yeah, he's real good. He's real pessimistic in this episode, but
he's
we
always
know why,
pessimistic.
So.
Like, famously, remember where Zeong is like, good news or bad news? And Park goes, good news. And Brody says, bad news. And then Young's like, well, why do you say it's bad news? And he's like, well, we only have 30% energy. And he's like, okay, Park, what's the good news? She's like, well, we have 30% energy. Like, Brody has been consistently pessimistic.
Okay, you're not wrong.
Anyways, they're trying to direct power to the gate. Greer and Scott go exploring, and I think they find more alien things.
Yeah.
Power gets transferred over to the gate.
Are you right that these hallways and things are very, very, very narrow in this the seed ship. Like, they can only film from above or in front or behind. They cannot really get off to the side in these areas. So, anyway.
Rey announces that they're going to go to Earth. Young calls for everybody to come back. Rush is like, I can't leave because I need to make sure the power transfer goes through. Also making a fine point of, I'm not leaving this ship.
Yeah.
Young basically says that they're expected on SGC, which is a good lampshade because the rest of us nerds would be like, aren't they just going to smash into the Iris? Because they don't have the radio frequency emitter. Like the secret pathway.
Yeah.
Thing.
That's an interesting question.
But Young told them that they're going, so it's fine.
Yeah. Right. Of course. It's all fine.
Everything's
if
fine.
If we can dial home, then it's fine. Well, I mean, you can presume that they would send someone through on the stones.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know, but...
To say they don't discuss that.
I just thought it was nice that they said that, so we didn't have to go... Yeah. So Park and Eli are happy that it's working, and then you should never be happy on SGU, because it's going to unwork the second you're happy about it working. And guess what?
Yep.
They radio Rush... Rush is shot right after Volker goes down. And now the ship is really, really screwed. So Telford has to go back over.
I hate this. I hate this. I really just want something to go right. It doesn't have to be dialing Earth, but
right.
I want something ever to work and it not to be stupid people.
I want a Star Trek episode where everything just ends up okay. Just once.
Well, I would like that in Star Trek as well, but I would prefer it on Stargate Universe.
I mean, I think one of the reasons I like Stargate Universe so much is because there's a real reality and consequence to everything they do, and that's what I don't like about Star Trek. But every now and then, I could really use just like...
Yeah. I mean, this just feels like a whole nother episode of push, 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 push.
Nope.
And it sucks. It sucks a lot.
It does. Telford finds everybody unconscious on the floor, and he offers to sacrifice himself as tribute to try and make sure that the power gets reversed. After Scott tries to, like, do it first, Telford's like, shut up. I at least have basic knowledge of ancient systems.
Yeah.
Which is a cool fact to know about Telford.
It frustrates me that they didn't leave one guard behind on the seed ship with Rush. When Rush was like, I have to stay here to watch this power transfer.
Right. I mean, they knew there are aliens
on there. One soldier. Yeah. One soldier, say, for example,
Greer. Yeah.
Have said, just in case, like, worst comes to worst, I don't make it home, everybody else does. That's okay with me.
Right.
I'm staying here to fix this.
Yeah.
And Rush would have thrown a fit about it. But, I mean, honestly, then it all would have worked and everything would have been fine. It's just very frustrating that, like, it's literally stupidity that caused this. It's not, you know, that they did everything right, but 12 aliens overwhelmed a guard. Like,
right.
No, it's just... It was only Rush, who's tired and not paying attention.
Right.
And
no, Volker was there.
Volker is not a defense system.
Not when his first reaction is hands up.
He is not a strategic arrangement.
No.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, you're right. So Rush disappears, and really suspiciously, because this is the time you would think you would need Rush the most. Which, of course, he is doing everything he can for them by going up to the bridge. But since he needs to hide the bridge from everybody for no reason at all.
Idiot.
Well, I mean, it's because he doesn't trust Young. He gave us the reason. It's not a good reason, but his reasoning is that he doesn't trust Young.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to save the day. And, yeah, Telford, time's up. They disconnect. Telford can't get off. And it's sad.
Yeah, well, and he's making... Sorry, Rush is making it so obvious that, like, what he's up to is not what he would normally be up to. Because the one thing that Rush can be relied on is to be in the right place at the right time.
Right.
that's the, you know, that's what made Brody trust him. That's what brought Eli back to trusting him, you know, time after time, despite that Eli waffles every time.
Right.
And instead, as far as everybody else knows, Rush is now MIA every time something serious is going on.
Yeah.
Which brings a lot more suspicion to him that he doesn't need while he's trying to hide something.
Right. Like, it's making him look like he's the one that caused the power reversal. Even though yes. they know it's Mazzini, but it still makes him look like that.
Yeah, or like he's not trying to solve the problem when there's a problem. It's
right.
It's not helping his case, is all it's I'm saying.
No, he's fucking up hardcore this season. And I guess now I'm a little bit more, like last season I kept getting mad because I know what the ending of SGU is, and where Young is like, okay, Eli, you stay awake and fix everything because I don't trust Rush. And I was like, why? Rush has done nothing to make you think you can't trust him, other than the fact that he, you know, tried to kill you. But, no, frame you for murder, not kill you. But he felt that was very, very necessary.
And to be fair, you retroactively justified it by attempting to kill him. Yeah. So team effort.
But, like, for the most part, Rush has proven that he does have the crew's best interests in mind. He does the ship's best interests in mind. He's just a little bit more cold and calculating about it. So I was like, why do people get so pissed? Like, why is Young still not trusting him? And then I'm like, you know what? With episodes like this, I totally get it.
Yeah, he spent weeks or... I don't know if we have a number yet, but, like, it's got to be at least a month hiding this really valuable information from the entire crew because he thought he knew better than literally the entire team.
Yeah. Which is probably why Brody decides to kind of not back him up in the future.
Well, says, like, you say that, and you keep saying that, but keep in mind that he founds a civilization that respects the man as a fucking god.
I know. That's true. But I still like, think him going through the Stargate in the first place was... No, but, okay, so he makes that civilization that worships Rush as a god after he realizes that Rush was right all along and that he should
believes that Rush will save us. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I still don't think that goes against what I'm saying. I think him going through the Stargate is the betrayal. So, anyways, now it's time for the ending where Young is just like, oh my god, I have to watch you die again, Telford. And they jump away, and Young is super sad because he finally trusted somebody.
And yeah, he finally...
They won't be there anymore.
Had some backup, had, you know, because he's been leaning real hard on his lieutenants and on Greer, right? Yeah. So he finally had somebody else that would step up and be in the same level of authority than him.
Yeah.
And that cared as much about the crew.
And the military. You mean in the military, because Rush and Camille have continually tried to step up and be someone in a leadership role. And
yes,
he
well, but
sets them down.
Yep, Young is not going to respect that. You're right. In the military,
yeah.
Well, and realistically, like you've got a lot of military officers who are not going to respect Rush and Camille.
Right. Well, we've already witnessed that.
On the same note, though, if Young was making it clear that like they had equal authority, then the military might fall in line. At least some of them might. Maybe not Greer, but definitely James or other people. Anyway.
Right. Well, I don't think Matt or Greer would because they both just like Telford that much. But they seem to be okay with him. Maybe they've squared that whole brainwashing thing a lot better than Young has. Telford is like, take care of yourself. Take care of the people. Ah! What a face turn. Then TJ brings blankets to the Lucian Alliance. So she's making the first steps. Thanks them for making her a priority when she got shot. And then we have a montage to some kind of revolution. And I really love the lyric, like, let me know when we get there. Because, like, they don't know where they're going to and what's happening. Like, they have no idea what the destination is. And I just love that sentiment.
Yeah, there's not a pattern to any of this.
It's just them living, surviving. There's no, like, oh, we have to defeat the Wraith. Or, now we have to defeat the Gold, or you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. There's none of that. It's just like this day by day surviving.
And not knowing what the next challenge is going to be and having no control over when or where you meet that next challenge.
Yeah. And I just think that song, like, obviously the actual song is about our lives and how, you know, there's oppression and our world's not perfect. And God, I can't wait till we can get there to where we have like a world where humanity is treated as equal with one another and everyone's happy. That's what the actual song's about, but it still really fits lyrically.
Yeah.
Stargate Universe.
And again with like music in the show being chosen really well. And
yeah. So I like that Brody's making liquor for Young, which shows that Brody knows how drunk Young has been getting consistently and not saying anything about it.
Or at least understands that that is something that Young will need right now, having just lost his only equal and friend.
And kid. But remember, Young has probably been doing this for a while because we've seen him be drinking for episodes upon episodes now.
Yeah.
Riley, he was drinking after Riley. He drank after the baby. He drank after Telford. And I'm pretty sure he was drinking before the end of season one. So Brody's been watching this for a while.
Yeah, there's a lot of really real loss.
Yeah.
That's happening.
Then you see Brody looking upset. And I feel like, again, another breaking point for him because he's so confused about what's going on. Like, I think he knows Rush is hiding something.
Well, he absolutely does. Because, like, he knows his own intelligence and he knows Rush's intelligence and he knows that, like, they would be on the same page if they had the same information, which means that Rush has information he doesn't have.
Yeah. Then Greer is looking at a photo of Riley and cleaning out his room, and something really weird happens. They forgot that Camille and Greer don't like each other, because Camille is comforting Greer.
Yeah.
Because that never got solved, if you remember. Like, the last time they met, he shot her.
And Greer does not, even if it had been quote-unquote solved, it's a little out of character. There's other people who would immediately just be like, okay, yes, I will accept comfort in this time.
Like, if it was Scott, you would see Scott patting him on the shoulder.
And absolutely.
But, like, Camille?
Seems a little weird, but,
yeah.
Yep. Character arc consistency in...
Well, they can't remember if Camille and Greer hate each other. It's like, they only remember it every four episodes, I swear.
Yeah.
Chloe's journaling, looks at her long-as-ass legs, and Rush is just sitting in the bridge, and it ends to let me know when we get there, if we get there, and I'm fucking chills.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's wrong! He's gone too far!
Yeah, and there was a brief, conversation with Imaginary Gloria there, which was basically, you know, Rush can't even justify it to himself anymore, right? Yeah. He says, I had no choice, and she says, did you really have no choice? And was it to save the crew, or was it because you can't give up on the ship yet? Which makes me wonder if he really did initiate the stop of the power transfer and the aliens were convenient?
No, I think...
Or...
But I think what she meant was is that he could have... He made a choice between two risks. One was actually reversing the power flow back to Destiny and getting people home, or just disconnecting it in case that failed and everything died. And I think...
Yeah.
In his mind, he weighed it that that was too risky and you should save Destiny first. Whereas it probably wasn't as risky as he made it seem to reverse the power flow.
Well, yeah, and we're in this place now where last season we would have trusted Rush and trusted that he had weighed those possibilities and just jumped to the right conclusion.
Right.
And we can't anymore because he's emotionally compromised.
Right.
He's psychically compromised.
He's even guarded from the viewer. Like, the viewer doesn't really question what Rush's intent is most of the time. Like, you can kind of figure it out. But, like, here, I don't know what it was, but I do know that he realizes that he's in over his head and he's gone too far now. And there's no way for him to reverse what's happened. Like, he rationalized it up to a point and now he can't anymore. And the only rationality he has now is that if I don't keep keeping it a secret, I am going to get in deep shit.
Yeah, and that's, like, when you're at the point where the lies have to be protected with more lies because otherwise people will find out you're lying.
Yeah, that's when you know you're bad.
That's when you've gone too far.
And that's what it is.
And that's where he is now. Like, he thought, here's Nicholas Rush world. He thought he would just take a little while and figure it all out. Right. And then tell them all, like, I solved it. Here it all is. Here's what everything does and how it works.
Right.
And continue being Scotty, right? Continue being the magical one with all the knowledge.
And that and was instead, not the case.
The ship is way more complicated than he anticipated. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the mind power or energy to focus on this problem and learn it all the way that he normally would.
Yeah.
Because I assume back at home, like, he would have just sat down in a room with the problem for a week and a half and figured it out. But he has other shit to do here. Right. And he's not sleeping and he's not eating well and he's got PTSD. And
And he's being haunted by his wife. And it's just, it's all bad news for him. Like, I mean, I still think about that, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine line. It's like, cool motive, still murder, bro. Like, I feel like, obviously not murder, but it kind of is along that same line. Like, get why you did it, but still was wrong. Yeah. Still wrong.
Still not the right choice. Yeah. And people that are more, you know, lawfully aligned or good aligned are not necessarily going to even get why you did it. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, any final thoughts?
I wish that Rush was handled better and that characters were more consistent.
I really love this episode, but I also hate it in the way, and I hate this bring up wrestling, but I'm going to. Like, the Wyatt family is this cult in pro wrestling, and their whole thing is trying to convert people over to their evil god cult. And every time they convert someone, within, like, a fucking week, that person is like, oh, I joined you to destroy you from the inside. I'm like, too soon! It's always too soon! And that's how I feel about this episode. Like, they have all these plot elements, like, coming out and really, really interesting. Like, Everett and Telford and Rush and the Brit. Like, it's just, it's too soon. All of it's too soon. This is coming to a head too soon. I needed to rest a little bit before they pushed the plot.
Yeah. You know, for Telford to go, and I understand Lou Diamond Phillips couldn't be in every episode in the same way Ming Na can't be in every episode.
Yeah.
But for Telford to go, like, push his way in, Everett, you can trust me, let me do all these things, to, well, shit, I guess I'm on a ship with aliens now.
Yeah. It's awesome that they bring him back, but yeah. It's just like, what?
Yeah.
Can they just not afford LDP? I know he's a big, expensive actor, but...
Yeah, it's odd. It's weird. Earlier, you mentioned Telford talking to Ray, and we're like, why did this conversation happen? And I was like, because they wanted to remind us that two of their three big-name actors could talk to each other.
That's a good point. Though Ming-Na wasn't as big-name at that point as she is now.
Yeah, that's true. She's the big-name of my heart, but nothing else.
And I don't know if LDP was that big either. Like, he was big. Bigger than most of the cast. Probably not Robert Carlyle. But he was still bigger than most of the cast. But I think he got bigger after Longmire, honestly.
That's true. Well, and honestly, Robert Carlyle, this was pre-Once Upon a Time, right? So he was huge.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think he was hugely popular among people who knew who he was, but I didn't know him very well.
He was, so I guess what I should say, he was a big, big name in English acting.
Yes.
That's all I got to say. Where can we find us? Where can we find us? Where can
we find
us?
Ourselves.
at SGU Podcast.
Inside. .tumblr.com. And you can find me at Cetra Lynn on just about every form of social media that there is. And where can they find you, Boom?
They can find me at Boom Complains for Twitter and Instagram, but my Tumblr is Boom's Loving the Alien. And if you're ever curious about my science fiction thoughts, of which I have hundreds, lovingthealien.net is where you can find me.
Very cool things.
Yeah. So have a good week, guys. Don't get stuck on a ship with Orsini.
Yeah. Don't leave your chief scientist alone on a ship with Orsini either.
Man, we learned so much from SGU.
If you're making choices, make good choices.
Bye.
Goodbye.